Hello.
Ah, now I hear you.
Okay, sorry, I wasn't here. Okay, that's good.
Oh, you weren't here. That explains.
Wasn't here yet. Okay.
Okay. If you weren't here.
We have recording. We have a quorum. At least one person want to listen to me. That counts for me. I appreciate you listening to me blather on. So where we were last time we were at was talking about the Miketz 40 Shana. It was after 40 years that Avshalom starts his rebellion. And we try to figure out what 40 years were, and I said that what I liked the most was the idea it was 40 years from the time that David was anointed, not became king. He was only king for a total of 40 years, so we couldn't fit that in there. And we didn't want to say from the time that Shaul became king, because then that tries to put too much stuff into that 40-year period. All of Shaul's reign, all of David's reign up to this point. So we said it was up to the point where it was from the point that David was anointed, where Shaul was basically told, you will no longer be king. And 40 years later, Avshalom time, it says, it's time to tell David, you're no longer king. It's now time for me to assert my authority. But that doesn't tell us exactly when it was. I mean, if you look at my little headcanon over here, when I tried to figure this out, you can see that I said it was it was 5 years before he became king. So where does that 5 years come from? The answer is, it comes from the Seder Olam.
What's that?
The Seder Olam is a sefer written by a Tana, Rav Yossi. So it's old, you know, it's from the year, probably first century CE, that goes through Jewish history and establishes the chronology. If we say this is the year, what is it now? 5780? Tavshanayan Pei? That comes from that chronology, where it goes through all of Tanakh with a very specific methodology, which basically is that everything is as short as possible. There's no specific years in there that it happened right away. And everything happens one after the other one. And that's where, and it goes through and tries to figure out how to put all the years together. And that's kind of what we assume is the underlying assumption of what the chronology of Tanakh is. You can disagree with it. All the Mepharshim do in various places, but it's a place to start and then build from there. Rosh Hashanah likes to call it a book of Midrash, but I don't think it's Midrash. It's definitely Pshat. I mean, he's going through all the text and saying, well, this was 300 years after that, so therefore I've got to put these all together and try to make them all consistent. You know, how do I deal with, it's 400 years in the Brit Bematariyim when it was much less than that when they actually were slaves, and then it says they were 430. That's where all these kind of questions are addressed initially, is in the Seder Olam.
It's overall Midrash because the world is more than 5,000 years old. Maybe that's what
it is. It's shot in the sense of it is looking at the text of Tanakh and taking it very strictly literally without anything else in there.
That's Midrash, yeah.
Okay, that's what Pshat is. Midrash is how do I read the Tanakh with everything from Torah Shebaal Peh inside of that.
Mm-hmm. But is it based on Mesoret or is it based on figuring out?
Both. I mean, it's consistent with Mesoret, but it's mostly he goes through and says, here's what the Pasuk says, so here's how long I think it must have been. So we'll see an example of that right now, because the Gemara, where it says that it figures that David was 67 when Avshalom rebels, and that was based on the Seder Olam's calculation of how long Shaul was king. But the Seder Olam itself has a different calculation, because it goes and looks at all the stories that happen after this.
Oh.
You know, we're in Perek Tet Zion right now, or Tet Vav right now. There's a couple of stories that come after that, and looks at the chronology there. And says, well, it says how long these all take, so we know when that is, and then David dies at the end of all the story, so let's work backwards from there. So this is the Seder Olam Rabbah, Perek Yudal, source 15. Mahira of Bimei David, Shlosh Shanim. We look in Perek Chaf Aleph, coming up. So we have this, what's happening, going to happen right now for the rest of Sefer Shmuel is we have Avshalom's revolution, rebellion. Avshalom is killed. There's another rebellion of Shimon ben Gera, which doesn't have a specific time on that. And then there's a list of all of David's second and third in commands, which doesn't affect the chronology. And then there's the story of the Ra'av, Vahib made David Shloshanim. There was a famine for 3 years. And that ends with the story of Mephibosheth and the remaining sons of Shaul. But that gives us 3 years. And then there's the story of the census. David decides he wants to have a census of all the people. Hashem says that's not a good idea, and there's a plague. And then at the end of that, there's a malach v'charbosh v'fal Yerushalayim with a sword pointing at Yerushalayim, and David realizes that the point where he's pointing at, that's where the Beit HaMikdash has to be. Not in Ir David, but on what will be called Har HaBayit. And the story of that is in Perek Chaf Daled, v'yishtu b'chol ha'aretz, they spread out in the whole land, v'yavo miktzei tisha chadashim, and they took the census for 9 months. So that gives us another, basically approximately another year. And that last year of his life is described as him preparing for actually building the Beit HaMikdash, setting up all the Mishmarot, all the schedule of Levim and Kohanim, putting everything together. He planned the entire house. It says in Devar Yamim, it describes this. That was in the 40th year of David's rule. That's when they started figuring out how they're going to build the Beit HaMikdash. So in terms of actual things that have times associated with them, there's 3 years, 9 months, and 1 year. So Sefer Olam says, obviously, that adds up to 5 years. Again, that's what I'm saying. That's the methodology of Sefer Olam, to say that there wasn't any, if there were any other actual gaps that took time, then they would have mentioned that. And so that's the Mari Cross that summarized this. The parish on Tanakh. If you add up all the years that David is alive after this conspiracy, it must have been 5 years. Therefore, the rebellion happens when David is 65 years old. Therefore, if I'm assuming it's been 40 years since David was anointed, David must have been anointed when he was 25 or 5 years before he actually became king. It says, that should be the 40 years can't be from the time David became king because he still got 5 years more of stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And I like that chronology. I think that's the right image. And then Barbanel points it out. This clearly has to be in the last decade of David's life. He's an old man. He's trying to figure out what he's going to do with his life. He's 65, right? That's the age to retire. And I like it, you know, that this is becomes. He's not going to accomplish anything more at this point. He's looking to see what his legacy is going to be. Who is he going to pass this on to? And the choice becomes between Shlomo and Avshalom. And this is very much Erik Erikson's last stage of ego integrity. I like Erikson's analysis of the stages of life. We have Ruthie here. Yeah, so we got our psychologist here. That ego integrity is this final stage, again, beginning at age 65. So that's a good number. David is 65 now, and he's looking at his accomplishments, the acceptance of one's own life cycle, something that had to be. David's got to put this together. This is what his life's going to be all about. And right now, it's all going to be ruined. If David knows what his life's supposed to be about, and that's about building this Beit HaMikdash, about having this son who's going to Asher Yetze Mimeyacha Huyivne Abayit Lishmi, and now Avshalom is going to destroy all of this. And so I think it works together, which is why I talk about this as my headcanon. And again, this is what I would put together as the stages over here. Though I would actually disagree with the Seder Olam about where you get that calculation from, because that 3 years of famine and that 1 year of the census that are at the end of Sefer Shmuel actually seem more like appendices to the book. This text itself really ends in Perek Chaf. Right, the way it summarizes everything about David's rule. Yoav el kol tzava, Yoav is on the army, Binyan ben Yehuda, ala kreti ba pleti, we talked about them on the, what we call it, Sanhedrin, the Adaram al Amas, and this is the person in charge of taxes, Yoshafat el Zaram Maskir, and he has a secretary, Bishay Sofer, and a scribe, and Sadduk v'yavit har Kohanim, and his Kohanim. This is summarizing David's rule, Yira ha'iri, Kohanim David, and that's the end. And after that, we have Perichap Aleph, which is the story of the famine. And then we have Perichap Bet, which is the story of David's heroes, and Perichap Gimel, which is the last shear of David, equivalent to Tilim Yudchet. And those are clearly like appendices. These are things that are stuck in the end, not chronologically there. And then Perichap Dalet is the census. Let's say those last four chapters are all appendices that actually happened earlier than where they appear, not the end of David's life, but it's still, I still think the idea of looking at it as being 5 years or so works. So this, we showed that last time. This is the way I would put it. So I would put Perichap Aleph, the famine, early. We talked about that. That goes with Perichet, where David goes to war, and then he rescues Mephibosheth. So this is the same story of Mephibosheth and that famine. And then we have Bathsheba, and I would say the census happens early in that story with Bathsheba. Mostly because the Midrash includes Achitophel, Bathsheba's grandfather, as part of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, or preparing to build the Beit HaMikdash. And Achitophel, we'll see, is going to be part of the conspiracy with Avshalom, and he's going to die at the end of the story. So that's the way I would put it. So we are, right now, over here. David is 65 years old. We've been doing this for about 9 years, and I appreciate all you staying with me for this journey. But we're getting close. I'm sorry? That's nine, right? Is it 9 years since Mitch made Aliyah?
That's just what I was thinking. Wow.
Yeah. And we're going to get through this rebellion. We're going to see what happens in the end. As a spoiler alert, David recovers. But at this point, David basically lost his malchut. Absalom is going to be winning for the next parak or so. And then I want to look back with what the Gemara says. It's been 40 years since it's Miketz Arim Shana Shasha'alu Lahem Melech, that they asked for a king. I said, I'm not going to take that literally because there's too much going on to fit all everything in Shaul's reign plus David's reign in only 40 years. And they don't specifically say it's 40 years Miketz Arim Shana from the time that Shaul became Melech. It's specifically 40 years from the time that they asked for a king. And I will take, like most Agadic statements, I will take that seriously, but not literally. The linking is between Absalom's rebellion and the asking for the king, and that takes 40 years. And 40 years is a significant number. That's the, and call it an intellectual generation. That's when you need new leadership. That's when you realize that you've basically forgotten what happened 40 years ago, and it's time for an entirely new mindset and way of thinking. And this is the way the Mishpat Zahav puts it. It's verse 20. Hadvar mitba'er hetev, the free divrei chazal, that we understand what's going on with Avshalom here. When Chazal looked at the Allah Pasuk, Vahim Mikes Abim Shana, he looked at this Pasuk, it was after 40 years that Avshalom rebels. Shemeret Avshalom haya Abim Shana l'achar shebikshu Yisrael lehem melech. It was 40 years from the time that they asked for the king. Pasuk mekashera to the rim zelazem. The Pasuk is basically tying those two things together. Bine kasher sha'al lehem melech. So what happened when they asked for the king? They go to Shmuel and they say, we can't do this shofet thing anymore. We need some kind of permanence. We need a standing government, a standing army. We need a king. And Shaul immediately tells them what we call Pasha Melech, all the things that a permanent government will do. They will take taxes. They will have a draft. They will take your sons and daughters. They will take your land. And that's all part of what it means to have a melech. And Shmuel does say that that's not necessarily a good thing. It's not for their own good, to ask for the king. That was Shmuel's response when they asked for the king. And now, So Avshalom is coming to Bnei Israel. We talked about that. That he wants to restore the age of the Shoftim. He's coming back and saying, you remember, this is what happens when you have a king. It was a mistake. When we asked for a king. Right? We should all go back to the great, good old days of the Shoftim. Nobody, 40 years later, nobody remembers how awful things were under the Shoftim. And Ishkol Yashar Be'enav was great for those who had power, but the poor and downtrodden were oppressed. And they would go and worship idols, and Hashem would send enemies against them. Things were not good with the Shoftim. But 40 years later, no one's going to remember that. Anyone here remember the Cold War?
I'm watching The Americans now.
Oh, okay. Never saw that.
It's pretty good.
Okay, right. So we're old, so we actually have some memory of what the Cold War was like and why, you know, and what it meant to be opposed to communism. Nobody now is afraid of the word communism because nobody remembers. It's 40 years. So that's Avshalom's argument. We need to go back. We need to eliminate the Malchut. We need to go back to the Shoftim. Gavar his hero Tana Shmuel and Nevi Yalkach. Shmuel already told us how terrible it was going to be. And we all know, famous line about Ben Arba'im Libina, at 40 we get understanding, or the way the Gemara in Avodah Zarah puts it, L'kai Idish Adaite Dirabe Ad Arba'in Shnin. A person does not understand their teachers until after 40 years. It takes 40 years to actually understand what you've been learning. That's why they say you're not supposed to learn Kabbalah until you're 40. It's not 40 years old. It's you have to be learning Torah for 40 years, and then you can start say, okay, I understand Torah. I can actually move on to things like Kabbalah. L'chein zeh zman, levatel ta malchut shel David. Avshalom, basically, the text is implying that this is now time, right? People have finally realized what it means to have a melech and what it means to have someone who has power over them. And now they're going to say, no, let's eliminate the malchut. And that clearly connects to what happened with Bathsheba. That's what David's a melech. He can say, I want this woman, I want this man killed, and he can do that. That's what happens when you have a melech. So this becomes a consequence of Masa Bathsheba. And that's what we've said. All of this is one thing after another coming out of Bathsheba. Masa Bathsheba, Masa Uriah. This all comes from Uriah's murder. This is also an offshoot of Parshat HaMelech, what it means to be to have a person in power. And all of this comes together, that underlying this is Hashem working behind the scenes, making all of these things work out. To take the Melucha from David. It's a consequence of Bathsheba, David has lost the Malchut. Natan already basically told him that your punishment, you're not going to die, but you will lose your malchut. That this evil will come from your house, etc. We looked at Natan's nevuah. And because of this, that everything came together, and that all of Israel spontaneously. Right, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. Everything comes together, and that Bnei Israel realized the time was right. This rebellion was appropriate. It was time.
Danny, can I just ask a question? Because yeah. It says that we're reading that David's ruled for 40 years, and if you look at the Book of Kings, I don't think there are too many other kings that even made it to 40 years because most of them didn't even make it like a week sometimes.
Well, yeah, okay. So the kingdom of Yisrael, almost. They all got assassinated. Most of the kings of Yehuda went for a while. I mean, Shlomo was also 40 years. Manasseh was 55.
Oh, really?
Later it was, I mean, the when they started, when it got closer to the Chorban, they started going faster as they would rebel against, you know, Babylonia or Egypt and they'd be deposed. Okay. I mean, these generations went pretty. I'm not sure how long Rehoboam was king. Look at I have the chronology somewhere here.
So you say David lost the kingship, but he really didn't. Shlomo does become king.
Ah, so the key, I think the way to read the story is at this point, we haven't seen the point where he leaves. So Avshalom will depose him.
Oh.
And then David gets it back. And that becomes a critical point that I will make that we get the climax of the story. The story of Bathsheba is not about David's sin, it's about David's tshuva.
Mm.
I think that's the way to read all the entire book.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have to put that together, say that how does, okay, the David, the actual outcome is that David loses the Malchut. It's parallel to Shaul. He doesn't listen to the Navi. He loses the Malchut. And what should happen is David dies in obscurity. Absalom starts his own new dynasty, etc. What it doesn't happen because David comes back, and that's going to happen.
Plus, we're still reading all his Tehillim.
You're right.
Can't say he's obscure.
He doesn't. Right. That's my point. Is that he doesn't lose it. Okay. As of right now in the story, he's going to. That's what it's inevitably down. We're going to watch him go, and we'll watch him run away. Watch him lose everything. Then he comes back.
Okay. Sounds good.
You gotta go. You gotta. There's a plot here. It's not too much of a spoiler, because you know how it comes out, right? Problem with learning Bible is that you know how it ends. There's not that much excitement there. Okay, but we will have to get to there, right? I will emphasize that we will see that over the next parak that David loses the Malchut. Right, he is in exile. He has nothing. He's got a couple of people loyal to him. Avshalom is ruling. Avshalom very publicly takes David's wives to make that point that Avshalom is ruling. David's reign is over. But David doesn't know it. At this point in the story, all David knows is Avshalom has come to him and said, Elchana v'shalem d'ari b'chevron. Let me go, Abba, and go to Hebron and fulfill my vow. I made a vow to Hashem, and I want to go offer my sacrifices. I'm going to go to Hebron. And if you look what David says, let's go to the back up to the beginning over here. Here it's by Yehime Kez Arba Im Shana. It was after these 40 years. Let me go and fulfill my vow that I swore to Hashem, and let me fill it in Hebron. Because I swore an oath, if I ever come back, I will serve Hashem. We'll talk more about that neder next time. The king says to him, go in peace. And he goes. Now that expression, Lech B'Shalom, has a very ominous sound. Let's go back down here. Lech B'Shalom comes up in Tanakh. And as a textual thing, it's foreshadowing bad things. Here's the story of Abner. Remember Abner? That was Shaul's chief of staff, who when Shaul is killed, he establishes Ishbosheth as the new king of Israel. And then they have a falling out, and Abner defects to David, who is the king in Yehuda.
Yeah.
So this is way back. This is 30-odd years before all of this. What happened? Now, you go Abner el David Hebron. Abner comes to David, who's the king in Hebron, Vito Asarana, Asrim and Hashem, with 20 of his men. Ayas David la Abner and Hashem, Asherito Mishteh. And David welcomes him. He's defecting from the kingdom of Israel, and he makes a big party for him. Yomar Abner David, Akuma ve'elcha, let me go. Vekbitza el Adoni Hamelech et Kol Yisrael. I will get all of Israel to be loyal to you, not to Ishbosheth anymore. Yichratu Yichabrit, and they will sign a treaty with you. U'malach tebechol asher tava nafshecha, and you will rule wherever you want. Vayishlach David et Abner. So David says, that's a great idea. I want to be king over all of Israel. He sends Abner out, Vayelech B'Shalom. And Abner goes, B'Shalom, in peace. And what happens to Abner immediately after that?
He gets killed.
Right. He goes out. Yoav, who's David's chief of staff, hears about this, invites Abner over with open arms, and stabs him in the gut, and leaves him dying in the streets of and the gate of Hebron. So this is the way the Medrash Tanchuma looks at that. Source 22. Kol mi shekatuv bo l'shalom, Holech v'chozer. It says lech l'shalom, two peace. They go and they come back. They survive. Ho mishakotebo lech b'shalom. If it says going in peace, b'shalom, holech v'eno chozer. We'll go and we'll not come back. We'll see that. So this is a literary trope, the way the Midrash Tanhuma is looking at it. You can tell what's going to happen. It's a little bit of irony, a lot of irony, to say, if you say lech b'shalom, ba'avner ketiv ba'yishlach et David et Avner, as we just saw the pasuk by Avner, it says that David sent Avner ba'yelech b'shalom, and he went to b'shalom, halach b'lo chazer, went, never came back because he was killed, the next scene. But Yitro, amar la Moshe, and we'll see when Yitro tells Moshe, it's time to go. Yeah, rather, when Moshe tells Yitro he wants to go back to Egypt to go see how his family is doing, Yitro tells him, lech l'shalom. Allah goes there, and Moshe there was successful. He goes, comes back. Shneimar v'yomer Yitro l'Moshe, lech l'shalom. That was Moshe. Yeah, chapter.
So we have to be very careful about how we give a bracha to somebody.
Right. So that is the Midrash Tanhuma looking at it literarily. If you see this in Tanakh, it is literary irony. The Gemara in Bracha turns that into advice. Source 23. Ma Rav Avi and Halevi. If you're saying goodbye to your friend, Al Yomar Lo Lech B'Shalom. Don't say Lech B'Shalom. Don't say go in peace. El Lech L'Shalom. But you should say go L'Shalom. To peace. Shere Yitro, Shamar Lo Moshe. We saw the Yitro. He said, Lech l'shalom, Allah itzliach. Moshe was successful. He brought the people out of Egypt. David shamar lo avshalom. Remember, David is telling avshalom, Lech b'shalom, our pasuk, halach v'nitla. He went. Next thing we see, he's hanged. Amar Rabbi Avin Halevi, and Rabbi Avin continues on in the same vein, hanifter min amet. When you're saying, giving your last respects to the dead, don't say l'shalom to shalom peace. El lech b'shalom. That's appropriate. Shenemar, that's what Hashem tells to Abraham. Avata tavo el avatecha b'shalom. You will come to your ancestors b'shalom in peace when you finally die. But the idea is that it's lech l'shalom, not so much peace, but shleimut is completeness. Lech b'shalom means you're done. Go in your completeness. You have accomplished everything that you need to do. There's nothing more for you to add. So within Tanakh, it's saying, okay, but you'll be gone by the end of the scene. And as a wish to someone else, you don't want to tell someone, goodbye, you're finished. But go on, and you still have a mission to accomplish. You still have met, you are not b'shleimut yet. You have still much more to do. As the famous philosopher Calvin said, in Calvin and Hobbes, God put me on this earth to accomplish a certain number of things. Right now, I'm so far behind, I will never die. So that's what Lech L'Shalom is. You're not finished. You're not done. Lech B'Shalom is to tell somebody, you got nothing more to do. There's no more point. It's a much more negative thing. But to say that as one's giving one last respects, the dead, that's exactly what it says. To say that someone dies, bishalom, means that they was complete. They accomplished what they were here for. There's a sense of completion in their lives. So from one point of view, you could see this as when David tells Avshalom, lech bishalom, either a literary irony, or agadically, this is, David gets a little bit of ruach hakodesh. He knows that that Avshalom's not going to survive. He's never going to see Avshalom again. But you don't have to put it that way, because it's clear from the way the term lech b'shalom is well, it has a sense of dismissal anyway. That we see that when Achish, who's the king of the Plishtim, is talking to David. Way back before David was king in Hebron, he was a bandit king in Ziklag. He was working for the Plishtim. He was a loyal Plishti warlord. And he's going to go to war against Israel is going to go to war against Shaul. This is Shaul's final battle. And Achish wants David to go along with him and help fight the Israelites. But the rest of the Plishtim don't trust him. Think that they think that David's going to betray the Plishtim as soon as they get a chance, attack him from behind. The irony there is that they're right, Achish is wrong. But Achish comes to David. Vayikra Achish el David, vayomer lav. Achish addresses David and says to him, Chai Hashem, by the life of your God. He's being polite, you know, I'm going to swear by your Jewish God. Ki yasharata, that you've been straight with me. Vatov be'enai, and everything you've done for me has been good. You've come and gone with me to battle. I have seen nothing wrong with you. David, you have been a loyal police chief all this time. From time you came to me until now. But in the eyes of the Sarnim, the other police chief officers, they don't trust you. They don't think you're good. What am I going to do? I can't have you come with me. Now you go b'shalom, in peace. Not the implication of going to die, but of b'shalemut, we are done. I can't have you here anymore. Good luck to you. Because I can't do anything wrong in the eyes of the other saranim. So that's what lech b'shalom is. So I don't think David knows, doesn't even suspect that what's going to happen as he tells Avshalom lech b'shalom, he's going to be involved in this life or death struggle, kill or be killed. But still, saying lech b'shalom is dismissing him. What it means in this context, I think, is a sense of goodbye, Avshalom. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. We're gone. You know, you will not succeed me. If you're going to Shlomo, he's going to build the bayit. Your way is not my way. So, live a happy life. You can go to Hebron. That's fine. And that's where we go from here. And Avshalom will do this, and we'll see next time how the rebellion actually starts and how it actually works out. Any questions?
Sounds good.